Faith Strong Today presents WikiGod with Mark Grollo. Hear new episodes every Wednesday and subscribe to the podcast at faithstrongtoday.com.
Well, hey, friends, this is WikiGod, our stories shaping God in Toronto. And I'm your host, Mark Grollo, and this is the uncut Faith Strong Today edition of the show. So come WikiGod with me. What's WikiGod? Well, it's the recognition that none of us knows everything there is to think about God, and so we talk to each other. We listen to somebody else's story and ask them what they think about God and why they think about God the way they do, and we ask them what they're doing about it with their life. And of course, that makes us think about what are we doing about it? Are we reacting against or for God somehow? I would argue we are, whether we know it or not. And this week, we're Wikiing God with Kevin Makins. Now, Kevin is a minister at Eucharist Church, and that's a growing and, man, pretty exciting community of people being and doing church in Hamilton, Ontario, always something happening at Eucharist. And Kevin is a creative, innovative guy. He's a riveting speaker. I've heard him talk, love what he says, and he's got a great style. He started a podcast a while back that's been a bit on hiatus, but you can still go and listen to Good God's 16 or so episodes. Really good conversations there. And he recently did something called the Holy Shift Tour. It was a bicycle and speaking tour in the GTA in Ontario. Went for a few hundred kilometers, which, man, pretty amazing to cycle and speak day after day. So I love what Kevin's about. Always got awesome, innovative ideas. I love the presence of Eucharist Church in Hamilton. And so I'll just get out of the way here. Let's get to the full conversation and Wiki some God with Kevin Makins.
Talking about God to a lot of my friends who aren't Christians is considered boring.
Hmm.
It's just not an interesting conversation.
And for guys like us, that's like, what?
It's like, what do you mean? The Lord is fascinating. But like, I don't think any of us, like, I don't care about armchair theology.
Right. Okay.
Like, I'm not interested in like, let's sit around and debate the finer points of Calvinism versus Arminianism. Okay. Like, it's, we can do it, but why would we?
Yeah.
Because there's all these real issues in the world, and there's all these real people that actually need an interaction with the divine, and there's real justice to be done that the prophets actually speak about. And
that's true.
You know, so I got this sense of,
but
like,
I guess a slight, because I'm kind of, you call it armchair theology, like, but
oops.
Well, no, but I think a lot of the theology that you and I react against, listening to your podcast, we're kind of cut from the same cloth. You even mentioned in your latest sermon, like the Darbyism, the left behind thing.
Sure.
Like that was theologians, quote unquote, that did that.
Yeah.
So like, I guess I've seen the damage that bad armchair theology can do and the influence that it has on the people that you're talking about. You're saying, go out and do stuff. Well, yeah, but once the bad theology downloads into the, quote, people who do stuff.
Sure.
And they start to spread that. It's like, oh my God, you just made a huge
mess. When I say like armchair theology, I mean, the wall behind you has a bunch of theological books and I've got a whole other one in a public library that a bunch of us pastors
share. And I've heard you preach, so I know you're into that.
I'm into theology. I'm just not into like Christian subculture debates, but I'm really into let's talk about the Bible. Let's talk about Jesus. Let's talk about God. And let's do it in a way that is actually, it's saying something to the real world.
Yeah.
It's saying something to the bigger world.
Right.
The world that is bigger than the faith we're a part of, but it's saying something powerful. And so the whole idea of the podcast was, you know, getting rid of some of the stuffiness and doing a pop theology, not because it's cheap and fluffy, but because it's accessible.
Right. Yeah.
And let's get people in here who, you know, dinner table conversation. What don't you talk about? Politics and religion, the two things,
which isn't,
so if we can, if there's a million things out there discussing politics from a pop perspective, from an accessible perspective, why is there so little talking about religion from an accessible, popular level?
Yeah.
And most of it's either created for exclusively Christians of a traditional, like, kind of evangelical stripe. And that's fine. But that's all we got. We got that. And then we've got sort of mainstream, mainline church coverage that is kind of stuffy and like, oh, it's cute. And then we got, you know, Pope Francis, who's like killing it. You know, he's like a meme now, as well as being the Pope.
Yeah.
You know, but there was in my mind, especially from a Canadian perspective, a real lack of accessible, popular theology, public theology. Right. And so I thought, you know, that's interesting to me. And that's what we've done in Hamilton. Is, you know, our church has been able to be a public church. People who aren't Christians know about and appreciate our church, even though they think we're nuts and they disagree with us and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
They at the very least respect the people that are part of the congregation. Right. And they can even respect the theology.
That sounds like something Paul said in a letter, right?
Please
he said,
I've never read him. I've heard he's great.
Just, and that's been one of my mottos too. That's why, like, again, I keep feeling this resonance of like Paul, contrary to what that evangelical stripe says, you know, go out and offend people with the gospel.
Sure.
Paul says people should actually like totally disagree with what you say about God. And yet the good that you're doing is undeniable. I mean, that's kind of what Paul said about like the churches he planted, like be doing such good stuff around you that like everyone... Like, they think your theology is ridiculous crap, like a Jesus who was crucified, whatever. That's so lame.
That's weird.
But, like, these people are so good.
Like, well, and at least, like my hope is that people are like, you know what? Like, I don't believe it, but I hope it's true.
Yeah.
Like, I would love
then
to live in a world.
Then at least something compelling.
I would love to live in a world where a murdered insurrectionist comes back to life.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to live in a world where someday the creator and sustainer of this stuff properly judges the world and sets it back to right.
Right.
Like
right.
I would be into a world where the entire universe has love towards me and love towards the oppressed.
Yeah.
But I just can't get there.
Right.
You know, so we can fight you about the fact that you can't get there.
Right.
Or we can open you up to opportunities to hear the voice of this Jesus that resurrected and maybe even respond.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't, we're going to love you anyways.
Yeah.
Like we're not against you. We're with you.
Yeah.
Even if we disagree.
Right. Yeah.
Which is why I love having like atheists or agnostics on my show and just, you know, going through it with them.
Yeah. And again, they speak so highly. Your last guest speaks so highly of kind of...
They're really nice people. I don't invite the people on that hate me.
those people are so... Yeah, but
speak highly of
you and other Christians, pastors in the city that are like...
It's insane. Yeah. And it's because in Hamilton, these pastors and these churches have worked really hard to actually be like Jesus, you know?
Again, like kind of mainstream theology says, you know, God used Babylon to judge Israel. Like we all say that in Old Testament studies, but we have a harder time with saying God uses atheists or people of other faiths to evangelize Christians. Like that can actually happen. I don't know why we're so comfortable with like God sends them to like kill, but then what if God sends them to like preach to us too?
Well, yeah. I mean everything that like Babylon's entrance into Israel makes them understand who they are.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then they suddenly go, ooh, we understand who we are. Some of who we are lines up nicely with Babylon. Some of who we're meant to be actually fits in Babylon culture.
Mm-hmm.
Some of who we're called to be is radically opposite to Babylonian culture.
And we forgot.
Pardon?
And we forgot.
And we forgot. Okay. Yeah. And you know, for me, when I talk to someone who's not a Christian, you know, something that they say is going to be, ooh, there's where God is overlapping us. Mm. There's where God's tugging something out because you've got it.
Yeah.
And something's going to be, oh, we actually fundamentally disagree. And I'm open to hearing why you think that way, but we disagree and we can disagree and actually love each other. We don't need to pretend it's all, you know,
that's all fine. Like about one thing that I heard you say in your podcast is, like, you're not a proponent of hanging out with people who just, like, let's not talk about our disagreement. Let's just kind of be all vanilla.
Very Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're saying, let's put it on the table and see where the points of disagreement are. And that's where that's where the rubber meets the road of liking somebody is like.
Yeah.
It's not because we don't talk about our differences, it's because we totally know what our differences are.
Well, and if I believe that the God of the universe is actually present and active, then what am I afraid of?
Yeah.
That the God of the universe is going to like what do I think he's not going to be present in that?
Right.
You know, that the God of the universe isn't going to act in some way in that. And so I can speak and I can share and I can listen and I can actually listen and I can hold my faith with an open hand because I don't hold my faith. The God who is my faith holds me.
Yeah.
So I don't need to cling to this thing. I can hold it openly, which will save you a lot of anxiety because suddenly I don't need to change anyone's mind.
Right.
It's wonderful. Right, yeah. I can just literally be a witness and listen well, and God can just take care of that stuff, which is way more fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's some of the podcast. That's some of why we started it. And we'll see where it goes. I mean, I've shifted down to every other week because unlike you, I cannot manage the schedule. I'm not as disciplined. I can't do every week.
Well, you preach on Sundays and stuff like that.
There's some other things.
So that's amazing what you're doing. Yeah.
yeah, it is. It has definitely been really fun. And it's a great excuse to sit down with people.
What you saying that allows the listeners to know that this is intense, producing a podcast.
It is. Yes. You should all respect what Mark does. It is. Boy, how do you do it?
And you.
Your denomination should really up their funding so that you have a personal assistant.
This is all just beep over this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, it's a lot of...
It is intense.
Yeah, it's just...
And we have the same two deal breakers. Well, no, we have this one of the same deal breakers.
Okay.
Because you've said you had two rules for your podcast.
Yes.
One was no Skype.
Yeah, no Skype.
And the other was no interview style. So like, I'm kind of more of an interview.
You send me questions in advance, and that's good.
But I find that like... interviewees are way comforted by that. Like,
totally. They're
like,
terrified
when I'm interviewing like professors and stuff. Yeah. They're just like, that's one thing.
They don't want to talk about the new Game of Thrones episode. They're like, I thought we were talking about the Lord.
But I guess like, oh, and that's the thing. Like maybe I shouldn't make this public, but one of the podcasts that I listen to, like WTF.
With Mark.
It's a bunch of comedians and they're like not, they don't have any, I thought it would be that easy. Comedians are able to say anything and speak about anything, but it's the second you start interviewing like pastors, professors, there's like this huge accountability thing where where things don't come out quite as raw as like a comedian who's like got nothing. They're between gigs. They do their own. Yeah. So I started realizing that the way to make a guest with a lot to lose feel comfortable is to send them like, here's kind of the fences that I'll be dealing with.
Yeah. And I mean, I tend to talk with people that to some degree know me, you know, which is why my guests aren't stellar. Like on their resumes, it's like, she's a pastor.
Oh, but
you know,
that's the beauty of a podcast is that like, I don't know who they are. And then I listen to an episode of yours, and by the end
I want to be there. I want to be your gateway drug into this person.
Exactly.
You know, you don't need to know who they are, just get to know me. We'll do it together.
And so that was, I think that was the other deal break, like the no Skype thing,
right?
Because we both insist on no Skype. That's why I drove all the way to Hamilton.
I want to cut you off if I got something to say, and vice versa. I want you to cut me off because that's the energy of a conversation.
That's right.
And you know,
the face-to-face thing, but it also keeps it somewhat local, doesn't it?
Totally.
Like there are podcasts that start that I've listened to, and they instantly go for like Tony Campolo and Rob Bell. Like they're going for kind of the national,
the big names.
You get them on, but once you say, actually, no, I will not do Skype, and you know, then it's a sense of they have to be around.
So I gotta find some Canadian famous Christians. There's none. There's not one.
They have to be around. And that means once you interview somebody who no one's ever heard of, I mean, by the end.
I mean, my thought was like, I mean, like Rob Bell and I will hang out someday.
Okay.
No, who knows?
With Kanye.
Who knows? With Kanye, I will have Kanye on the show someday. Big ambitious goals. You know, I want to talk to the names of people that I respect who write. I had David Fitch on on recently. The episode hasn't gone live yet. But I wanted it, for me, it was like part of the fun. I'm sure you feel this too, is like the show is not just the guest. It's the two of us.
Yeah.
And that's why it's interesting if you get to know the host and the guest.
Yeah.
And I could have David Fitch, you know, you could send him questions and he could write a response and you can get your David Fitch answers.
Yeah.
But part of the fun is sitting with Fitch and saying, if you listen to this, it's going to be a unique conversation with David Fitch because, you know, he and I talked about hockey. I don't like hockey. We talked about kids playing hockey. We talked about things that don't normally come up because that's how conversations go.
Right.
You don't just hit the bullet points, you
know?
Right. And I've heard that on your show too. Even though you send questions to people, that's not a script.
Like, all right, we've been talking for 10 minutes and it's a disaster. My plan for how this conversation
I'm sorry. No,
no, but that's exactly what you're saying.
I submit to you. You're driving.
No,
you're
driving. So great.
But it should be, what is it like when Mark and Kevin get together to do a conversation?
Oh,
and
gosh.
It should be that.
I hope no one ever finds out.
Well, who knows? They're going to find out now. It should be the terrifying and bizarre intersection of two people that makes a conversation interesting, you know? And so I think the Skype thing is like, you can get a conversation with a big name, quote unquote, but you're just getting the same conversation the big name gives to anyone else because it's on Skype and they're dialing it in because they do these things often, and that's fine. But I feel like podcasting is the thing about that's so great is it's kind of the pirate radio of the world right now. Yeah. There's no lengths you got to listen to. Right. There's no words off limit or themes off limit. You can talk about anything. Mm-hmm. And so let's go there if we can for now, you know, let's dive in. And that's why this is fun.
It is. I keep not wanting to interrupt you, but
no,
you keep dropping the Kanye thing.
You're
okay, what's going on with the Kanye thing? Can you talk to me?
It's mostly a joke, but I really like Kanye West. I don't know why.
You don't know why? You gotta know.
Have you gone to a show?
No. No, but I saw your blog or I scrolled through.
Oh, my blog I updated once. Yes, big blog.
It's he's also done some pretty like crazy things, right?
I don't think people should like
judge him by
pick him as a mentor. I don't think people should be like, you know.
I really but think the whole Kanye like I'm gonna let leave. You finish. Beyonce had the best video of all time. Like
he was
I don't
right.
know.
She did have a better video than Swift. But
we have a true fan here.
I feel like it's mostly because it's funny because it's funny to be super into somebody that is so bizarre. But I'm a big fan of big personalities.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think that, you know, I wouldn't want him to be my pastor. I wouldn't want, you know, you don't, but there's something about someone who's audacious and they're going to make things, you know? And that's what I like about Kanye. Sufjan Stevens, one of my other favorite musicians.
Oh, man.
They don't go half-assed.
Right,
they
go
whole hog.
Yeah.
He built us, like when we saw him on tour in Hamilton, he came to Hamilton 5 minutes from our house on foot. So we had to go.
Kanye or Sufjan?
Kanye.
Okay.
He built a mountain and the mountain split and erupted in fire and Jesus came out with a Catholic procession and Kanye wore diamond masks and the stage lifted up and it was winter and it started snowing in the space and there were Psalms and Matthew 5 projected on the ceiling of the amphitheater. And you were just like, what the heck is happening? This is so insane. And there was something almost like apocalyptic about it, right? There was something almost like liturgically, you're swept up into something bigger, you know, something like the Book of Revelation. This kind of, there are things happening that don't happen.
Right.
And I love that in an artist. You know, that's my thing about artists is that they can, Sufjan did the same thing at every tour I've ever seen him at.
No limits.
You're doing something that you don't see every day.
Right.
And for a little while, you're going to be in a world that is bigger and more bombastic and maybe not even comfortable, but you're going to be there.
Right.
Same with a good like art installation or Nuit Blanche or Supercrawl in Hamilton.
Yeah.
You're going to see things you don't normally see.
Right.
And that opens you up, you know,
yeah.
it opens you up to the kingdom, I think. When you can have your imagination expanded by seeing something massive.
That's
and
right.
yes, you can hate on Kanye for being egotistical or making weird like quotes, things he says. He's very intelligent, but I don't know if he has a high social intelligence. I don't know. He says strange things. And
you're
going
to find out when you podcast.
Someday. I'm going to have to get this gear by then. I don't know what it is, but something about him means though that he's going to swing for the fences. And I've got to respect that.
That's cool.
And listen to it. So yeah, Kendrick Lamar, you know, a lot of these hip hop artists are the roots, you know, these are the new theatrical voices and I just find it fascinating.
Yeah.
So that's my thing with Kanye.
That satisfactorily answers my question.
There it is. You should listen to
that's
it.
That's a good
before.
I've seen like,
I don't know if you can say that on
Seth
your
Rogen
if
and
you get in trouble with your
and, no. I've seen Seth Rogen and like James Franco,
which was also
mock them.
Beautiful, just a beautiful work of art.
So I keep getting snippets of him and like almost the constant like the memes that I'm gonna let you finish the
on your drive
the people
home
who make
today,
fun of him.
On your
stuff.
Drive to home today, tune into like Ardio or
never
YouTube, whatever you've got.
Seriously, okay.
Listen to My Beautiful Dark and Twisted Fantasy.
Okay,
that was his last album.
All right. I listen to you on the way to Hamilton. I'll listen to Kanye. On the way
it's just a good album, and you may not be into it. Hey, people out there in Radio Land, you don't need to like Kanye to get along with me, okay?
Right.
Or to go to Eucharist, our church. You know, you don't need to do any of that. I just am interested.
Yeah.
There it is.
That's pretty cool. Can we get a little snippet of like your growing up, your upbringing?
My upbringing.
All the things that contributed to the Kevin Makins of today.
The Kevin Makins of today. The Kevin Makins.
So you grew up where?
Poorly known around the world. Hardly known at all, and so this won't be interesting to many people, but raised in Hamilton.
Cool.
Raised
there you go.
Up on the escarpment, which is we call a mountain.
Yes.
It's a mountain to anyone from Ontario.
Yeah.
It's a hill.
I went up it today and it blew my mind.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. Big hill.
It was
but the downtown of Hamilton where we live now was always kind of a little more off limits
in the sense of
very impoverished.
Really? Like
oh,
the
yeah.
James, whatever it's called, Jamestown?
James Street here?
James?
I mean, James Street, when we moved downtown 7 years ago, was nearly entirely boarded up.
Wow. It feels like kind of like Queen Street almost. There's like a vibe.
Yeah, but
that's come with a lot of intentional hard work.
Very impoverished. Steel industry started falling and shutting down. Yeah. Flight to the suburbs in the 80s. Classic story like that.
Okay.
Hamilton just kind of fell into you know, terrible spots. Houses, yeah. like you could buy a house $50,000 because yeah. it was just nobody wanted to be down here. Boarded up streets, lots of issues around mental health, poverty. Okay. There's a study in the Hamilton Spectator called Code Red that went out back in 2006, I think, 2007, maybe even 2008 or 9. I don't know when. I remember reading it when it came out.
Yeah.
Can't remember how old I was.
You were old enough to read.
Yeah. So it was definitely sometime in the last 30 years. The study was showing like the life expectancy in Hamilton was the same in downtown was the same as some third world countries. Like, wow. So it's a rough city.
Yeah.
And so I fell in love with it working at a day camp when I was in high school. And I just, you know, classic story, somebody raised in the suburbs that suburbs are fine. There's no problems with it. But, you know, when you come downtown, sometimes people raised in the suburbs fall in love with the grit and grime.
Yeah, that's true.
And kind of like, realness, yo, of the of the urban setting, and I just fell in love with this park called Beasley Park, which is like 5 minutes away from our house here.
Wow!
And it was at the time the third poorest neighborhood in Canada, and I was 16, running a day camp with 30 kids, and they were like, you know, don't let people into the park. If in the park, at any moment in the park, there's at least one pedophile, so you can't let the kids go into the park without supervision. Needles. One time we went to open up the day camp in the morning to the center that we ran it out of, and we couldn't get in because there was like a passed out big large drunk guy passed out right in front of the door, like an ogre, you know, or like a rock that must be rolled before the Lord resurrects. Like, it was just this like man laying there, and we had to wait for the drunk tank to come in, and three people pick up this man, and throw him into the drunk tank. Like, that was what this, you know, I walked at the back door my first day, and there were two guys heating up heroin on a spoon.
Wow. And you're in your late teens?
I was 16.
Wow.
Yeah, I was about midway through high school, but I just loved it.
Right.
I was just like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Raised in the Lutheran church.
Okay.
So raised in a Christian home, great Christian parents. Found it interesting, but sort of everyone in the church was older, adults. You know, it's kind of like, okay, so you become a Christian when you're around 50. And that's when you start kind of like living by it. So until then, I don't really know what this means for my life personally.
Yeah.
It was kind of the religion relationship kind of tension.
Mm-hmm.
There was something there with God that had been like instilled in my life, and my parents were huge influences on that and kind of nurtured and fanned that. And then, in my grade 12 year, that kind of exploded into this kind of revival in my heart.
Okay.
Revival from the Lord.
Very Wesleyan.
Yeah, thank you. And then that really shook some stuff up in my grade 12 year. So I worked again at this Beasley Park the next year.
Okay.
And that's when I was like, you know what? There's something more than just an appreciation here. There's a sense of calling that I think I'm supposed to be down here somewhere. So I never went too far from home, like a 15, 20 minute drive, that's but a very different kind of city.
Yeah.
And fell in love. And now Beasley Park is no longer the third poorest neighborhood in Canada. It's actually thriving.
Yeah.
Great neighborhood association, great people living there, amazing diverse neighborhood, you know. So things have changed and changed in a lot of ways and in very good ways.
Yeah. What about so you talked about growing up in a Lutheran church.
Yeah.
Not to separate that from who you are, but what's the kind of Jesus journey been like? Like you said, raised in a good Christian home. Did you ever have kind of a crisis of faith time?
Well, like last week I had
in the last 12 hours.
No, that's, I mean, there was there was sort of this foundational laying in this first chapter of my life, which was the Lutheran church chapter. And I'm still Lutheran in a lot of ways.
Okay.
You know, I'd still say now I'm like, there was the good Lutherans, bad Lutherans. We were the Missouri Synod, the conservative ones, the good Lutherans, the bad Lutherans, you know, and women and gay people and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So we were raised conservative, but I now like all the Lutherans. I like all of them. I'd hang out with any of them. And that was kind of that was the foundation. Then there was this chapter two.
But it was like a moralistic upbringing, you would say?
No, it was a very, very non... Like, Lutherans are not moralistic, almost to a fault. They're just grace. my uncle was the pastor, and, you know, there was always this, like, this is... I believe this, but I don't know what it means. It doesn't really mean... There weren't enough people that were showing me what it looked like as a young person.
Right.
So, you know, my parents and some other people in the church can only bridge that gap so much.
It's confessional, right? Like in the sense of like you're, it's kind of creedal, you're focusing
on. Yeah, creedal, Apostles' Creed, like Nicene Creed, know my creeds, Lord's Prayer, stand, sit, you know, incense, light the candle, all that good stuff.
But I guess those denominations tend to, John Zook was mentioning this about the CRC. Like as long as you say, okay, the canons of Dort, I'm behind.
Yeah.
Then there's lots of wiggle room in terms of like contemporary hot button ethical issues. They didn't talk about those 400 years ago. So you kind of get to fly below the radar.
Yeah, and
you
don't have to have like a stance. The one that we were in was much more stance oriented.
Okay.
The other Lutherans, Evangelical Lutheran Church in Canada or Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, much more wiggle roomy. Ours was a little more conservative, which always, you know, I could even see was a tension for other people in the church and for my mother, you know, but it was never bad. It was a good church. It was a good parish church. And now my image of the good life for the church, like the good church is far more like that Lutheran church that I was raised in than anything else I've seen, simply because it was a parish with a pastor and people in it, and people like knew each other they weren't like, you know, they didn't have programs and all this stuff, but they were a real church. So it did shape me pretty foundationally.
Okay.
Then I had this faith awakening, like 18 years old, youth group kind of thing, went because a girl, you know, classic story, girl and pizza, I'll go to youth group. And then, you know, Jesus is like, no girl, no pizza, but Jesus. And I'm like, hey, now that's a bait and switch. And then God cackles in the heavenly realms. But the bait and switch worked and really had a faith awakening around, okay, so this is what it looks like to be a young person. Who is going to pursue my faith as a young person.
Is that the girl who's downstairs right now?
No, that's not that girl.
Oh, geez.
She knows. She knows a different girl lured me in, which is good. God was like, you can't be with that girl because then you'll feel like you got your way. No, you got to wait a couple of years, then you'll meet your wife.
you had your wilderness wandering.
It was a good faith awakening. And you know, like the Lutheran Church, it had its own shadows and had its great things. You know, youth group culture, for the first time, it was like, here's a chart, Christian music on one side and non-Christian music on the other side. If you liked Blink-182, you'll like MXPX, you know, and there was
interesting.
That kind of, I was like for the first time, I was like, there are other Christians. Like I was raised Lutheran. I just didn't know there were other people around who went to church. So that was kind of, you know, really taught me a lot about the individual faith and how to have a relationship with God.
Right.
But the ecclesiology, the structure, the attachments to kind of a Christian culture, consumeristic Christian culture kind of thing was also kind of there. You know, it became much more your identity marker. But in a bit of an us versus them way. We're the Christians on the inside, we convert those on the outside. So it was really good in all these ways. And a lot of the people I know now, like a lot of people became Christians this year in my high school. We had like a little mini high school revival. There were like 80 people started going to our youth group from our school, from like 5 to 80 in a year. And we like had this blow up in the news where our Christian group got kicked out of the high school because it was too big. And it was like, it was a weird time. and we were thrown in this not knowing anything.
It's like Christian Hamilton Woodstock or something.
Yeah, it was weird. And of this group of people that went, you know, like 20 of them became Christians or like 30 of them became Christians. At least they said the prayer.
Yeah.
But like half of them or more are still Christians today.
Wow.
Which doesn't sound that impressive, but if you've actually been in ministry, you know that that's massive. That like half of these teenagers who made decisions are more than half.
It wasn't just the altar call effect. There was something.
No, something happened, you know? And again, not perfect, but something good happened.
Yeah.
And so those were sort of two of the major movements.
Okay.
There was another movement in my life that was taking some of that fire, that fundamentalistic fire of like, we're in, they're out, we're right there, all that. And God kind of purging that out of me using a variety of means, everything from, you know, living downtown in a city where I'm meeting lots of different people and my eyes are open to the bigness of the world. Being in seminary, learning more about the Bible and Jesus and realizing I had brought some stuff in with me.
Rick Tobias said that very thing in my interview with him.
Oh,
like,
really?
Nothing sifts through that theology that you just mentioned.
Okay.
Like some time with the poor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That
totally.
Just kind of your whole house of cards just.
Well, you just realize like we can build a church that's like based on this like ideals.
Yeah.
But then we're just building a superstar all-star, like an all-star
team. Yeah, you're right.
You know, like, oh, if you're married, middle class, straight kids, white, or willing to act white.
Right.
Like if you check all the boxes, you
unaddicted,
can join our
employable.
Church. Yeah, but once you get divorced, you're gone.
Yeah.
And not because we're going to kick you out, but because you know that you don't really belong.
Mm.
or once you lose your job, you kind of, you're kind of gone. Once you're addicted, you're kind of gone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that for me was just this realization of, I don't want to build an all-star team for the people that can get all the theological answers and they can check all the boxes and they don't ask tough questions and they don't ever doubt. I don't want to build a church of boring people like that. Like that's, that's fine, but it's only fine if it's among people that are different and if it's a space where we're discipling one another. Yeah.
I like Jesus's words for things like that, where he said the righteous, like he called those people righteous, which is kind of weird, but like that sense of like, oh, you've got it together. Like we like to say, well, maybe he was being sarcastic or maybe he meant you think you're righteous, but he kind of was like, okay, good for you. But I've come for the people who are really like, messed up.
Yep, you're all healthy. You don't even need me. Sweet.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over to this church full of addicts and weirdos and doubters and, you know, and I just think that's, again, I don't want to tear down what that is. Somebody's got to have the mega church where people that are, that their lives look like they're together can go. And that's fine. Like, I'm not going to beat that down. But if you're in an urban area where people flee from small towns or suburbs because they're not welcome, they flee because they got divorced. They flee because they are gay. They flee because they don't want to work at the family business anymore. They flee for all sorts of reasons. And where do they flee? Toronto or Hamilton? They flee to urban areas. And I actually believe Jesus loves those people just as they are. And if we're going to love them, we're going to have to eat with them and share life with them and help them hear the voice of Jesus and let Jesus take care of whatever needs to be taken care of in all of our hearts as we listen.
I'm getting a sense from you talking how you might answer this question, but again, you can name your podcast anything you want.
Sure.
So you go the video game route, a little flavor, but you named it Good God.
Yeah.
So why Good God of anything?
Of anything.
I mean, just Good God. Like, why would you name it that?
Because I sat in this office for hours saying, I need a clever name. And my wife was like, just please stop and,
good
and
just God, name it please anything.
Stop. Yeah, I was like, good God, that's brilliant. I mean, it was... I
assume you could just answer it the way you've been talking the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple answers.
There seems to be a...
There's God is
a
good.
A conviction in
God
you.
God is that, really good. And the gospel we have is actually good news. And if it's good news, it's good news for everybody. And if it's not good news for everybody... It's not good news,
right.
You know? So there was this sense of the theological side is this has to be good.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just, the weird thing in Western culture is that people, no one knows what the gospel is because we're post, well, not Western, in Canadian Western culture, we're post-Christendom, we're post-Christian.
Right.
So everybody, nobody knows what the gospel is, but everyone thinks that they do because we're so close to this empire called the United States of America.
Right, right.
Or we still have these outposts of this victorious Christianity that sort of reigned for so long. So people have received bad news in the name of God and they believed in a bad God that is fundamentally about anger and judgment and hell, or fundamentally against a group of people, or fundamentally about controlling or punishing. And so, you know, everyone's like, oh, I've heard the gospel. It's bad news.
Like when you say nobody and everybody, do you mean people who are not in the church?
Extreme language.
Well,
sorry.
I mean, you're not meaning nobody. You said nobody knows the gospel. I assume when you say that, you mean like people who don't go to church?
I like nuance.
Or do you mean like you and I?
Off right now.
Or do you mean it's, surely you don't mean it's unknowable.
No,
you
mean
a lot of people assume they've heard it.
I would say a lot of people. Yeah, I should be really
careful
with language.
Like in the unchurched.
I would say a lot of people were never raised in the church.
Right.
A lot of people my age,
post-Christendom in Canada.
Yeah, like when I was raised, nobody went to church. But they've all heard of Christianity.
Right, and then they assume
and not, again, I said all. Many of them have heard of Christianity. And if you were to ask them, what is Christianity about? What they say is not favorable.
Right.
And even those of us that were raised in the church, if you were to ask us what Christianity about is about, sometimes some of us would actually not have a favorable answer either. We just happen to stick with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you just say to someone, describe, you know, what the gospel is, and they say, oh, it's like kind of bad news. It's like billions of people burning in hell forever. It's pretty bad news.
Unless they choose.
You're kind
of
laughing and you're, unless they
choose the right door.
And in their heart, in the right door at the right time. But if they get hit by that bus, then God divinely sent them because double predestination and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And like, for the record, I'm not like some like flaky universalist. We can go down that road if you want. I'm just not. Gospel's got some teeth to it.
Yeah.
But it's You've not, if through. Someone says, oh, well, it's bad news. It's like, no, actually it's literally good news. Yeah. Gospel means right. good news. Yeah. So I feel as if God is good and God is love, and it's good news whether or not you even believe it.
Yeah.
But when you believe it, the good news starts to actually change you and it becomes good news for everyone around you.
Yeah.
And so the theological side of the title was, I'm just so sad that people don't know that God is good. And I'm just so sad that people don't know that the good news is really good news, actually good news, not just for those on the inside, but those on the outside too.
Mm.
So that was kind of the theological angle of it.
Really
the other angle was, I just needed something that sounded kind of funny and subversive. Like right. I just needed to sound, because it's pop.
You don't need to tell us that part.
It's pop
tell
theology, us,
I like
right?
The part so where it you're has sitting to in your be. Office, like,
yeah, I'm like, oh, dark night of the soul. I started like a to candle's lit. Lord, give me a name. And God's like a good God. But the other side was, it's just got to be fun to say. Yeah. You got to be like, oh, you listen to Good God,
yeah.
you know, and oh, good God. And so it had to be also pop,
yeah.
you know, and my friend, Justin Broadbent, who's a designer in Toronto, did some designs for me, and he gave me this one that was good with the O stamped out and good God. And I was like, that's tight. Uh-huh. That is fantastic. Cause that's exactly it. You know, yeah. that says it all. So
yeah.
That's why we went with Good God.
I want to read.
That's a very long answer
so
to
fantastic.
Your question
exactly
about
exactly what I wanted. Boom. Tweetable. If there, we were allowed like 2,300 characters, but
it's like bloggable.
I'll type it all out in the show notes. I want to read, like, if you go to goodgod.ca, you can read this.
I like that you're a podcast plugging my, it's very inception of us to be like,
oh yeah.
Three levels.
We
got
to figure out a way to. But let me read. Across North America, this is what you typed, so you'll know this. You've memorized this, I'm sure.
Well,
across
I typed
North
it one
America,
night, late at night, drinking coffee.
I wrote that.
Trying to stay awake.
I'm going
to
read it for you.
Thank you.
These were your amazing.
Can you read it
late
in my
night.
Voice?
I don't know. Should I impersonate you? We've just met. Might be. Across North America, the Christian faith is shifting rapidly. While fewer people click the religious box, it seems more people than ever are drawn towards a life of service, simplicity, and spirituality. We're in desperate need of fresh new stories of what God is doing and why it's truly good. So how do we tell these stories? Sermon podcasts are great, but too rigid. Conferences pack in crowds, but can end up feeling corporate. Even blogs can end up feeling a little distant and removed. What we need is another medium, a good way to tell stories that will amplify and celebrate what we hear all around us. And Good God is a humble and shaky step in that direction. Why do we need Good God? Here's the thing. These stories aren't primarily written on paper. They're found in people. Characters with histories and personalities and horrible failures mixed with stumbling victories. I read that and I just, it's creepy that we started a podcast at the same time.
Like 2 weeks apart.
Yeah. I mean, but also like, you know, my whole Wiki God podcast, our stories shaping God. You hammer away at the stories here. We're just, it's kind of uncanny, this story emphasis. Well, I just wonder, I mean, where did we, it's like, it's almost like we're both drinking some kind of Kool-Aid. And the
There's
question for me is like, where did we get that? Is that just post-modernity, do you think? The sense of like, yeah, I too, I mean, we're both sitting, you know, 100 kilometers apart thinking the same thing. Like, I didn't start a blog for the reason you said. And I didn't, I mean, sermons are, this is the way I talked about like starting the podcast is a sermon is a very specific kind. It's all very propositional typically.
Well, we put our sermons online,
yeah.
but they're, oh,
yeah.
I always
but
say.
But it's a propositional, it's a different kind of.
Well, and I also say like sermons are about shaping a community.
Yeah.
I only preach about half the time at Eucharist because our job is to make disciples. Mm. And if I'm preaching every week, why is no one being discipled and preaching?
Yeah.
You know, so. Those are fundamentally about this group of people.
Right.
And we always say we put them online, but if you listen, we'll never videocast our sermons.
Right.
Hmm. Maybe you shouldn't quote me on that in case one day we do, but I don't think we ever will because if you're listening in, we want you to feel like you're listening in through a keyhole.
Hmm.
You're not getting the whole experience. When people laugh at something, you're going, what is that laughter about?
Hmm.
You're not meant to know because you're not a part of this church.
Hmm.
And that's okay because there are wonderful churches everywhere and you need to be in one because the medium is the message and the medium is a time and place gathering.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like sermon podcasts are great. But you're listening through the keyhole and you shouldn't get it.
That's right.
You shouldn't really get it because you're not a part of the church.
Yeah.
And that's not, it's a little exclusive, But there are churches everywhere that you need to become a part of.
It's only exclusive because of the new technology, though, that expects us to record them and slap them online. Like, yeah, we wouldn't say that.
Yeah, unless you should this be technology. In a, like, imagine a place where, like, it's like people actually get together in time and place.
I can't imagine.
And that. I mean, that goes back to the Kanye thing, right? Yeah. Like, you're in a space and amazing things are happening with people all around you that you're committing to. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we might record it and put it online, but it's not the same. And and the reason we don't videocast is you shouldn't be able to think it's the same. Mm-hmm. You should know something's different.
Right.
And that's where, you know, they're didactic. They don't work.
Yeah.
They don't work to communicate at a fundamentally audio level. Mm-hmm. They're holistic.
Right.
But podcasts are audio.
But what's the thing about the story? Like, what was it for you that, like, story being so key, story being so central and important, what do you think we learn from stories?
I mean, I think
the stories of people's lives.
The book of Acts has that great section about welcoming the Gentiles where it starts with, they just start giving testimony about everything that God's doing among the Gentiles. Mm. Like, oh my word, have you heard what's happening among the Gentiles? Like, no, what's happening? Oh, like, these Gentiles are becoming Jesus followers. Mm. And they're like, what are you talking about? Only Jews can become Jesus followers. Mm. He came for the tribe of Israel. They're going, yeah, I know. I know that's what the rule is, but it keeps happening anyways, and we don't know what to do.
Right.
I'm like, well, where are they? Well, let's pull some in. Let's hear their stories.
Mm.
And as they tell their stories, you start going, oh my word, God is up to more than our little slice of what we are seeing. And the resurrected Jesus is on the move, and we wouldn't have known it unless people just started sharing their stories and giving witness.
Because their response is then, who are we to stop this?
Like, when they're going, so are we? I guess we've got to adjust to the story. And, you know, people could take that into all sorts of weird directions.
Yep.
But fundamentally, it's saying, we believe that God is big enough that you can tell the story and we're not afraid.
Yeah.
We don't need to sanitize it, clean up the story. We don't need to protect the story.
Mm.
You can tell the story. And we'll read it through the Spirit together in community with Scripture, with community. And we will listen and we will allow that to shape our understanding of God. Because God isn't, you know, I'm young, white, middle-class guy. Well, God's not me.
Right.
But there are deposits of God in my culture and in who I am.
Yeah.
And we've got people in our church from from Kenya, and God isn't Kenyan, but there are deposits of God's glory in Kenyans, Imago Days, in Kenyan culture, and in the culture of people that are older and younger than me, and children, in the poor. All of these people have deposits of the Imago Dei in them, and the Spirit's going to pull out, Jesus is going to pull out parts of that Imago Dei in their lives. And if I don't make space to hear their stories, I'm going to miss out on more of who God is.
Right.
So for me, Good God was, you know, I think both of us are in a Canadian culture where we're recognizing the institutionalized religion is just falling. It's collapsing. Yeah. Christendom is ending.
Yeah.
It's over, actually, in Canada, at least. And so it's a prime time to start listening again.
Mm-hmm.
And the early church had this kind of explosive beginning, but then there was this season of listening because they knew that if they don't listen, they're going to miss what God's doing.
Right.
And so, you know, I see the end of Christendom not as a disaster and a tragedy, but as God birthing something new, reconciling denominations and people and ethnicities, reconciling the church back together.
Mm.
And, you know, if we don't take time to listen, we're going to miss it.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because I talk all the time.
Well, I can tell you're a little uncomfortable. I mean, you're on the other side of the table today in the sense.
Well,
as a host, you're being a fantastic guest.
Oh, thank you. I have no problem talking. But, and what I was saying is,
you listen when appropriate.
In Good God, I listen a bit more.
It wouldn't
more.
Be appropriate for you to listen right now.
No, right now I'm supposed to talk. It's my sweating, job
I'd
right
be
now,
sweating
baby.
Bullets.
And you know, when I'm on the other side and I'm interviewing someone, I listen a bit more. I still talk a lot. But when I'm in my congregation, I mean, when I preach, I talk a lot. Mm-hmm. But when I'm in my congregation, I listen a lot more. Mm. And I've had to learn to do that because I don't know what it feels like to be one of the only non-ethnically white people in our congregation. So I need to listen extra hard.
Right.
And in a congregation of younger people, like most of our congregation is like under 35.
Mm.
I don't know what it's like to be somebody in your 50s or 60s. So I listen. I don't know what it's like to be a gay Christian in a world that has never welcomed you in as an equal or as a brother or sister. So I have to listen.
Right.
You know, so I, as much as I talk as a persona on this kind of conversation we have, when it comes to being the church in time and place, which is truly my first love, I got to shut up.
Yeah.
And I got to give, if I have any opportunity to have a voice, I need to give it to people that maybe haven't had that opportunity. and I need to listen and let them speak.
And ironically, that comes with privilege.
Totally. We threw a men's...
The whole, like
we
you threw say, white, anti- middle-aged, English-speaking, blah, blah.
Yeah, we threw an anti... not anti. Mark Driscoll came to town with James McDonald and a couple other people
when
for
I heard
a big
you
men's
did that,
conference.
I just,
so we threw... Their conference was called Act Like Men.
I know. And
yeah,
you
did hear about it.
I didn't know you were behind the follow-up comp. You were part of that, though?
Well, we...
Act Like Men question mark?
Act Like Men question mark was planned by a few of us in Hamilton that just said... Well, they were going to... They were
God
going to where Kanye
you.
Was going down the street. And again, it's not even to say like we need men's conferences, all right? Like men need to follow Jesus and they kind of suck at it sometimes. But some of the macho stuff was a little much for the feminist in me that believes, you know, women are people too. Oh, that's rude. That's rude. I shouldn't say that. That's rude. And I know complimentarians.
Now we're getting a taste of the Kevin Macon's troublemaker.
There are complimentarians
Head to good God
in
for more.
our network of True City in Hamilton that I'm connected with. Complementarian churches that are redeemed versions of that model. They're wrong.
Interesting.
But they have, that's okay that they're wrong.
That was well said. Redeemed versions of that model.
My neighbor's a pastor in one of those churches and I love you so much. I won't even say his name on here because people might know him. And you know, he would say the same of me. Well, you have the right to be wrong, Kevin, because I love you.
Yeah.
You know, but these guys are coming in out of town, big voices, big conference, pulling people in, ruining our witness in the city by making this rah-rah men. So he just threw this kind of like conference that was like, well, and let's listen to maybe some women's voices. And so all that to say, you know, we threw it, but I didn't present at it.
Okay. Yeah.
We had more women presenters than men.
That's cool.
And those of us that had some ability to pull people in, to pull 200-300 people together for this conference, we didn't speak.
That's so good.
Because it's our job. You know, we gave the mic to some people that you know, some of them have their own influence and some of them didn't have as big as spheres because women pastors don't always get naturally the same spheres of influence that young white alpha males do. So how do we talking with them, we kind of said, how do we use our privilege to edify the church and to give you the voice to share what God is doing?
That's cool.
And we got a lot of failures, but I'll tell you the good story. You know, I don't want to share failure stories.
That'll be interview number two.
Yeah.
Failing with Kevin.
It's gonna be a very long podcast.
I wanted to point out another thing from that that rant that I read, the thing you wrote on your
well-crafted rant.
Yes, that was excellent. You point out kind of the move towards three things: service, simplicity, and spirituality. You said even though people would say I'm not religious, there's this draw to service, simplicity, spirituality. Why do you think our generation is drawn to that? I mean, volunteerism, serving. We're not less depraved, quote unquote, to put it like a Calvinist, than any other generation. So we can't pat ourselves on the back and say we're just better. Is this like a reaction against something or?
Yeah.
I mean, and you can't say it for everybody. There's
no,
a lot of
I
people
mean,
who
I
are
live
still,
in a city where people have rallied together for some very valid reasons. And many of the people at the center of that are Christians and many of the people at the center of that aren't. So, you know, I'm also around some pretty stellar people that would not check the Christian box.
Right. Yeah.
And I probably worth saying, you know, every culture's got its idols. And the simple, sacred, and serving. It was just three things that started
service
with S.
And spirituality.
I don't know why I really wrote it three
good.
Things that start with an S.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, that'll do.
Alliteration. Alliteration. Done. And now here I come along picking those three things.
Yeah, you're like, why did you write
no,
your thesis?
But I'm not asking. I'm asking because I think it's true.
Yeah.
But like.
And so there are natural idols there in the same way there were natural idols on the flip side in my parents' generation or their parents before them. You know, we've got idols of, like you said, volunteers. Everyone has a cause.
Right,
everyone's self-righteous.
And LinkedIn,
we've all got
they ask
cause.
You, like, what's your cause? What? Write it down
like,
here.
Oh, I'm for, I heard David Fitch was like, I'm for the mistreatment of extinct animals. And it's like, that doesn't even exist. And he's like, it doesn't matter. It's my cause, you know? And so there can be a bit of a, you know, a fetishization around cause, but at the same time that there are idle temptations, but there is something genuinely I think the Spirit is doing in the world. And I have no problem thinking the Spirit works outside of the bubble that I believe in, you know, in my faith. You know, I believe that the same Spirit's working around the world and in our culture. I think that people just kind of hit a dead end with some of the capitalistic consumeristic stuff. I think it was just, people can realize we're being sold stuff. You know, we're being bought and sold by advertisers, by the powers that be. And they may not have the language to overcome it or believe that God has already overcome those powers. But I think they can tell the powers are there. You know, Walter Wink's stuff. I don't know if you've read much Walter Wink, but he talks about the powers in relation to some of that stuff. And I think people can pick up on the powers are selling me. And so they want something simpler or they want something sacred. You know, my wife goes to yoga every week and, you know, the classes are full. Like yoga is a massive sense of people saying, I want to connect with the sacred. And, you know, do I think it's a perfect fit with every Christian value? No, but do I think that there's a lot there that lots of these people find and that God uses it? Totally. Yeah. You know, so I think that that kind of draw towards service, away from consumerism, towards simplicity, away from, you know, abundance and towards sacredness, away from institution. You know, there's stuff God's doing there. And I don't know exactly what it means to engage with that culture. But I do think if we see kingdom values at work outside of the kingdom walls, or what we would think are the kingdom walls, we can either say, hey, we were here first, get with us, you know, get in line. Or we can say, wow, clearly the Spirit has been doing, it's like running into the people of peace when Jesus tells them, go to the towns and if you meet a person of peace, go in, eat what they offer, live there, stay with them.
Yeah.
Don't try to like fight them. Name what God's already doing, celebrate it, maybe even invite them into the fullness of it. But you don't need to like attack them.
Yeah.
You know, so brand if you see
it. It's the branding problem.
Yeah, get away from it. You know, get your ego out of it.
Yeah.
If you see God doing something already, celebrate it, join it, and speak into it. And let the Spirit naturally build those bridges. And if people are going to be called into what the Spirit is doing in Jesus, then I am all for it.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about Eucharist Church? What are the central values of kind of how you guys gather? What does it look like?
It's very churchy.
Okay.
It's a very churchy church.
You do kind of liturgy stuff?
Not quite.
You're doing
that
Christian calendar
we
stuff?
We call it liturgy for mutts.
Okay.
Which is largely, I mean, our church is tons of different backgrounds, especially around denominational to no church background, tons. So we have like, this is gotta be like 40 or 50 denominators. We had 27 people in a members class last fall, and there were 24 different backgrounds in the room.
Wow.
From non-Christian to Greek Orthodox to Jewish to every strand of Christian denomination. Wow. So we see it as our fundamental value is the Eucharist, is the table.
Right, yeah.
And is that storytelling that I was mentioning before, the sense of mutuality, the sense that we are parts of the body here to build up the other parts of the body. And none of us are better than the others, and none of us are lesser than the others. We are all equally beloved, and we all have something to share for the edification of the other. Mm. And that's not a hippy-dippy. We all have something to share in our hearts. Jesus has given each of our backgrounds a part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God has given a part of the Imago Dei into each of us. The Spirit has moved.
Mm.
The streams of living water stuff with Richard Foster. There's these different streams.
Yeah.
And all of them need to come together if we're going to truly be the body of Christ.
Right.
Because Jesus himself had all of these parts present in his life. So the Eucharist is our primary image and metaphor.
Yep.
We kind of feel like it possessed us. We didn't choose it.
You celebrate Eucharist every time you get together?
Yeah, every time. And we eat together a lot on top of that. You know, any meeting we have, we try to eat. We throw love feasts, these massive dinner parties for the city where we'll invite 200, 300 people and we'll pay for all the food and everyone's invited. It's like a big wedding and everyone can just eat. We do a couple of those a year. And, but we want people to recognize the table is the place where we're reconciled to one another and we're reconciled to God in this all in one motion. And that reconciles, you know, your Galatian stuff, right? The Jew and the Gentile, the male, the female, the slave and the free.
Yep.
These different worlds come together and we're not perfect. You know, we don't have all those worlds. There are worlds that would feel uncomfortable at our church, not by design, but just because we're people, you know, but we do want to have a space where as much as possible, God is reconciling humanity to himself. And we are pleading with one another to be reconciled to God and to be reconciled with one another and God in this Eucharistic moment.
That's awesome. I don't have to ask you what you think the role of the church is in the GTA, because I think you just answered it for Eucharist, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, your church is a microcosm of what the church needs to be doing. I'm saying that because I end every kind of podcast saying, what is the primary role of the church in the GTA? I don't want to say the world, that's a little, but But I think you would answer it the way you just did.
Yeah, I mean, we're big on reconciliation. Yeah. 2 Corinthians 5 is a verse that's been used a lot by us about God and Christ reconciling us to him, but giving us that ministry as well. Mm. Reconcile and pleading, be reconciled with God. Yeah. And that reconciliation happens at a city level between the rich and the poor, between the gentrifiers and the gentrified. Mm. It happens between people of different ethnic backgrounds, between gender, sexuality. I mean, the war that the church has waged. Mm. I've mentioned queer Christians a few times, not because we're, you know, a church that has a flag or something, you know, but we just genuinely believe in reconciliation and in peacemaking. Yeah. And we believe that God is at work in every culture and in every person.
Yep.
And so our church would have a wide variety of people from all these different camps. Mm. Everyone in our church disagrees with everybody else on everything, except Christ has died. Christ is risen. Mm. Christ will come again. And so if we have that, we come to the table.
Mm.
And at the table, we break bread with people that we disagree with and people that we're scared of and people that we kind of don't know if they get it entirely.
Right.
And some people come to the table. They're not even sure they can believe it. They want to believe it.
Yep.
And so they come to the table with their doubts. And there's a sense in which, as we come together at the table, we submit ourselves to what God is doing, and he brings us together in a practice run at the table. And then we spend the next week trying to actually do what we just did, which is be the body reconciled and bring reconciliation to others.
And then do it again next week.
And then keep that movement going.
That's amazing. Well, I'm going to let you go for sake of time.
How
can we find more of you?
Nobody wants
listen
more
to good God.
Nobody wants
come
more
on, go ahead. Plug yourself.
There.
Go ahead.
I do this to people too, so I get it. People can, if they're interested in listening to good God, there's a great podcast out there called Wiki God, which you should listen to. I highly recommend subscribing. Give a 5-star review on iTunes.
That I wouldn't mind.
There it is. And you can follow Good God, which is a show much like this. If you care more about this, you can listen to Good God, which is Good God.
And like you said, in a not perfectly symbiotic way, but we can find your sermons online. Like I downloaded you.
And if you go to eucharistchurch.ca and you click on sermons, or if you go to iTunes and you search Eucharist Church, that's the best stuff I got, because that's the stuff that the congregation shapes with me and the stuff that I actually spend more time on. So yeah, you can listen to those sermons. I actually really like the Eucharist podcast, even not just when I'm preaching. We have some excellent preachers that are being trained within the congregation. Mm. And I think when I preach, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not great. But I think it's the stuff I put the most energy into when it comes to theological reflection and proclamation. So check that out. And goodgod.ca. And you can find a friend on that website and listen to a conversation between me and somebody else. And it's always good fun.
Sweet.
Cool.
Thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you so much.
Oh, there you go. Kevin Makins. Find him at eucharistchurch.ca, or check out his Good God podcast on iTunes, or check out his Holy Shift tour. I know he's got stuff jumping and cooking with that. And now, make sure you subscribe to WikiGod on Faith Strong Today so you never miss an uncut episode of WikiGod when it comes out on Wednesdays. To connect with me, well, you can email me directly at mark@wikigodpod.com. Or you can tweet me at Mark Grollo or at WikiGodPod on Twitter. I would love to engage your thoughts, hear your feedback about anything you're hearing here, and join us. Well, next week, join us again right here on Faith Strong Today when we're Wikiing God with Dr. Jerry Martin. He's the author of a book called God, an Autobiography, As Told to a Philosopher. And man, you don't want to miss it. Thinking cap on, he and I kind of geek out theologically for a good hour or so. So catch that next Wednesday right here on Faith Strong Today. Don't miss it. But as for today, well, that's it. That's it. That's all. But thank you so much for joining, and thanks for wikiing. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to WikiGod, presented by Faith Strong Today. Share this episode on social media and find more great programs at faithstrongtoday.com.